The sanctuary of Eleusis was one of the most important religious centers of antiquity. It was dedicated to Demeter, the goddess of nature, agriculture, and rural life, and her daughter Persephone or Core. Eleusis is connected to the two goddesses thanks to the myth of Persephone's abduction by Pluto and her mother's search for her. This myth, told and retold by singers and playwrights, was one of the most popular legends of the ancient world and has been a source of inspiration for many artists through the ages. Today, the organized archaeological site of Eleusis extends across the slopes of the hill of the ancient Acropolis, topped with the little church of Panagiomenes Sporitissa. The monuments of the sanctuary of Demeter and Core from different phases of its use. The best preserved belong to the imposing structures erected by the Roman emperors, all initiates of the Eleusinian mysteries, during the final flourishing of the sanctuary. The first stop of our tour is the Roman court, marked on the map with number 1. In the Roman court, the worshippers gathered on arriving at the sanctuary. The Sacred Way, the main road connecting Athens with Eleusis, along which the procession of initiates walked during the Eleusinian mysteries, terminated at the north end of the Roman court. On this spot are preserved the foundations of a semicircular structure, the podium from which the sanctuary officials observed the initiates' arrival. In Roman times, the Roman court was paved with large rectangular marble slabs and surrounded by magnificent buildings. The quality of its materials and design indicate that the construction of the Roman court formed part of a larger building program undertaken by the Roman emperors, which started with the Philhellene Hadrian, who raised the entrance area to prevent flooding, was continued by Antoninus Pius, and was concluded by his successor Marcus Aurelius. The next stop of our tour are the triumphal arches, marked on the map with number 2. On the southeast and southwest side of the Roman court stood two identical imposing triumphal arches, faithful copies of Hadrian's arch in Athens. From the east arch a road led to the area outside the sanctuary walls, where there were bathhouses, hostels and other public buildings intended to serve the pilgrims during their visit to the sanctuary. From the west arch ran the road to the Astyia gates in the west part of the wall, leading out of the sanctuary towards the city of Eleusis. The arches, of Pentelic marble, were originally 16 meters high. The main opening measured 4.85 meters at the threshold. On either side of the entrance were pedestals supporting Corinthian columns, while pilasters with Corinthian capitals stood at the corners. The surviving pedestals of the east arch are decorated with relief-crossed torches, one of the best-known emblems of Demeter and her daughter Persephone. The upper part of the arches was divided into three by Corinthian columns, the middle section crowned by a pediment imitating a shrine facade. Bronze statues of the emperors and their family members were probably placed in the openings. On both sides of the architrave was carved the inscription Tinthein Key to Aphtrocratorii Panhellenes, the Panhellenes to the goddesses, and the emperor, meaning that the arch was dedicated by all the Greeks to the two goddesses of the sanctuary and the emperor Hadrian. The Panhellenes were the members of the Panhellenian, a religious, political and cultural league of all the Greek cities of the three continents with Athens as its seat, founded by Hadrian in 131-132 AD. The inscription was written in such a way that the word emperor was exactly over the center of the archway. Today, many architectural members are gathered together near the base of the east arch, along with several fragments of the double inscription, while an attempt has also been made to restore it in miniature form. Of the west arch, only 14 architectural members and part of the inscription survive, collected at its base. The next stop of our tour are the stoi, marked on the map with number 3. An L-shaped stoa colonnade ran around the west and north sides of the court to the Sacred Way. There were rooms only in the west side of the building, while the north side was a simple open, shallow stoa with a colonnade supporting a pitched roof on the side facing the court. The size and layout of the rooms suggest that they may have been intended to house official guests of the sanctuary, while the larger chamber, which had a mosaic floor with a geometric pattern, was a banquet hall. A smaller stoa closed off the east side of the court. It had a row of columns of which only the foundations survive. The next stop of our tour is the Fountain House, marked on the map with number 4. Next to the smaller stoa was a fountain house for the use of the initiates on their arrival at the sanctuary and for their purification before entering the sacred space. This magnificent structure is dated to the 2nd century AD. Today only the lower part survives, consisting of the bottom of the U-shaped cistern, with the opening measuring 11.30 meters on the east towards the court. There is also the white marble floor with 8 basins that would have caught the water flowing from 8 spouts. Below, a channel cut into a blue marble step carried water to a main drain to the east outside the walls. The upper part of the fountain was faced with marble and fronted by 6 smooth columns with elaborate capitals. The architect Rolandos, who drew the whole fountain house, noted that the columns and cornice resembled the facade of Hadrian's library in Athens, and attributed the construction of the fountain house to the same Philhellene emperor. The next stop of our tour is the temple of Artemis Propalia and Poseidon Pater, marked on the map with number 5. Near the center of the court is the floor of the Roman temple of Artemis Propalia and Poseidon Pater, Artemis of the Gates and Father Poseidon. The temple is described by the Greek geographer Pausanias, who visited Eleusis in 160 AD. The temple was built of Pentelic marble and had a wooden roof with clay tiles, and a front and rear portico fronted by 4 Doric columns. It was similar in size to the small, elegant temple of Athena Nike on the Acropolis of Athens, as the Roman emperors wanted to erect copies of Athenian buildings in the sanctuary of Eleusis. East and northeast of the temple are the remains of 2 altars dedicated to the 2 deities worshipped within it. To the north are the ruins of a pedestal on which the statue of Poseidon probably stood. The next stop of our tour is the Ashara altar, marked on the map with number 6. Northwest of the temple of Artemis Propalia and Poseidon Pater is the Ashara, a ground altar dated to the Roman period and probably constructed when the court was paved. It is a square pit, 1.75 meters deep with brick walls surrounded by a low limestone wall. The sacrificial fire was lit on the floor of the structure, while a small shelf projecting midway down the walls supported the Ashara or iron grill on which the sacrificed animals were placed. These were mainly piglets, the customary offering to Demeter. The fire was supplied with air via a system of 6 vertical flues piercing the side walls. In the northeast corner of the area around the altar are the remains of a polygonal wall of the 6th century BC, while to the south are the remains of an apsidal building dated to the 8th century BC. The next stop of our tour is the Greater Propylaea, marked on the map with number 7. A magnificent gateway, the Greater Propylaea, delimited the south side of the court. This imposing structure is dated to the Imperial Roman era and was constructed over the Old North Gate, the plain fortified entrance built in Cimon's time. First half of the 5th century BC, the Propylaea faced towards Athens and were almost an exact copy of the central part of the Propylaea of the Acropolis. The structure consists of 2 gates fronted by 6 Doric columns. The north outer gate had 5 entrances, accessed from the Roman court by a flight of 6 steps. It is interesting to note the many incised graffiti, board games on the steps and paved floor, which show that pilgrims used this area for entertainment and socializing before they entered the main sanctuary to carry out the mystical ceremonies. The south gate led to the inner court of the sanctuary, on the same level. Next to this gate was a cross wall with 5 doorways, of which only the thresholds survive today. The wall divided the structure into 2 unequal parts, the north side being significantly larger. The roof was supported by a stoa with 6 elegant Ionic columns behind the 2 central columns of the north gate. The Doric columns of the north facade were crowned with an entablature with flat epistyles, a frieze with triglyphs and metopes, and a pediment, its tympanum adorned with a relief bust of an emperor in the center of a shield. The emperor is wearing a cuirass with a damaged Gorgoneon in the center, on which a Christian cross was later carved. This is probably Marcus Aurelius, who reigned from 161 to 180 AD and is thought to have completed the Greater Propylaea. West of the monument are collected many of its surviving architectural members and the piece of the north pediment with the bust of the emperor. The next stop of our tour is the Kylochoron well, marked on the map with number 8. Northeast of the Greater Propylaea and at a lower level is the sacred well of Demeter, the Kylochoron well, meaning the well of fair dances. The traveller Pausanias records that the women of Eleusis performed dances there as part of the rituals in honour of the goddess. The structure is dated to the late 6th, early 5th century BC. Today it is partly concealed by the later Roman structures of the entrance to the sanctuary, 2nd century AD. Today the well is 6 meters deep. The interior is faced with well-built polygonal stonework. The wellhead is formed of two concentric rings of grey-blue Eleusinian stone, the fair dances, as the excavator D. Filios remarked in 1892. The stones were joined with metal double T clamps. The lower outer ring served a double purpose, both as a step to stand on when drawing water and as a seat where the maidens perhaps sang hymns to the goddess. The area around the well is paved with limestone slabs, with dark Eleusinian stones around the perimeter. The whole area was enclosed by a high arched wall with a limestone base and brick upper courses, pierced by three entrances which may have been associated with cult rituals. The wall was modified into a low balustrade, perhaps in 297 BC during the reign of Demetrius Ponocetes, and was ultimately destroyed in the 3rd century AD. The next stop of our tour are the auxiliary buildings marked on the map with number 9. The auxiliary area of the sanctuary contains the house of the Caryx, an underground cistern, and granaries. The area, which extends west and east of the greater propylaea within the enclosure, contains the remains of storerooms for the offerings of the worshippers, administrative buildings and priests' dwellings. These buildings are dated from the time of Peisistratus to late antiquity. On the west side of the auxiliary area, at the foot of the hill, are the remains of a building identified by the excavators as the house of the Caryx. This was used for the meetings and ceremonies of the sacred family of the Caryx, Heralds. They were the second great priestly family, from whom the Dadushos, torch-bearer, was chosen. He was one of the most important priests of the Eleusinian mysteries, second only to the Hierophant, who came from the family of the Eumalpidae. The building is dated to the Roman era and consists of a large hall on the north side, presumably for the gatherings of the priesthood, and a row of three rooms on the south side. The central one of these, room Gamma, contained a fresco depicting animals and a seated Zeus holding a statue of Nike. A libation basin and a small square altar in the same room indicate that this was a sacred space. In the east part of the auxiliary area, next to the greater propylaea, are the remains of an underground cistern of the Roman period, which provided water to the main sanctuary. The cistern is divided into two large vaulted spaces of stone and brick, coated with waterproof plaster. The first space was a settlement tank where the water was cleaned as the suspended solid sank to the bottom. The second space was the distribution tank, from which the clean water was drawn. The interior of the cistern was accessed via a narrow stone staircase. The upper part of the cistern, where the entrance was, preserves traces of marble cladding, indicating its luxurious construction. Water management was one of the main priorities of the reorganization of the sanctuary in Roman times. The Roman emperors built large cisterns to collect ever-increasing quantities of water in order to supply the many fountains and bathhouses. The emperor Hadrian, himself an initiate of the Eleusinian mysteries, undertook major water supply works at Eleusis. The bed of the Eleusinian Cephisus was diverted and the bridge at the entrance to the city, still visible today, was constructed, together with the aqueduct of the Thracian plain, which carried potable water from the springs of Mount Panitha to supply the city and the sanctuary. Large sections of Hadrian's aqueduct are still visible in many parts of the town. Southeast of the cistern are the foundations of a large, elongated building of the Roman period which served as a granary. Such granaries, called cirri, were used to store the first fruits of the harvest, which every city was required to offer to the demeter as a sort of tax in kind. The first fruits, which had to be of the best quality, were delivered to the priests of the goddess in good time for the Eleusinian mysteries in the autumn. South of the Roman era granary is that of Perigal's time. This was a triangular building with two rows of square pillars supporting a flat roof. One row of pillars is preserved to some height. The remains of the granary of Peisistratus' time survive west of the lesser propylaea. This is a rectangular building, particularly well constructed of polygonal blocks of grey-blue Eleusinian stone. It continues to the west, under the later Roman sanctuary wall of the 3rd century AD, which is built of a variety of materials. The next stop of our tour are the Lesser Propylaea, marked on the map with number 10. On leaving the auxiliary area, visitors pass through the Lesser Propylaea, the monumental gateway of the 1st century BC that formed the inner entrance to the sanctuary. It was built on the site of the earlier Peisistratian North Gate and formed the main entrance to the sanctuary before the latter was extended northwards and the Greater Propylaea were constructed. A Latin inscription on the epistyle records that the gateway was dedicated to Demeter and Persephone by Appius Claudius Pulcher, who was consul in 54 BC. The gateway consists of an outer portico on the north side and an inner portico on the side facing the telesterion. They are divided by a cross wall and a central two-leaf door which opened onto the inner portico, as the well-preserved circular grooves in the paved floor attest. Two other straight, parallel grooves were probably rainwater drainage channels. The paved forecourt was accessed by two steps to the north. The outer portico had a pediment supported on the pilasters of the doorway and two Ionic columns, of which only the bases remain in situ. The Corinthian capitals and pilaster capitals are elaborately carved with winged lions and bulls. Two of the capitals are placed against the wall east of the Propylaea, while the other two are displayed in the museum courtyard. The entablature had an Ionic epistyle and Doric frieze decorated with the cult emblems of Demeter, Sister, sacred caskets, and wheat sheaves on the triglyphs, and rosettes and bacchrania on the metopes. The ceiling was coffered. The inner portico was quite different. It had a flat coffered ceiling supported by two monumental caryatids of Pentelic marble. One of the pair is displayed in the Archaeological Museum of Eleusis, while the other was stolen by the British traveller E. D. Clarke and taken to Cambridge, where she remains to this day. The bases of the caryatids are preserved in situ. Below each one was a fountain, but later side entrances were opened where the fountains had stood. The next stop of our tour is the Temple of Pluto, marked on the map with number 11. West of the Lesser Propylaea, at the northeast foot of the hill of the Acropolis, are two shallow connecting caves in the rock. The north wall of the smaller cave is pierced by an opening accessed by a flight of six steps cut into the rock. The steps lead outside the enclosure, down to a pit in the rock. In front of the larger cave are the limestone foundations of a small templum in Attis, which was dedicated to Pluto. The temple is dated to the 4th century BC and replaced an earlier 6th century structure, incorporating its remains. In the later phase, in the 4th century BC, the area of the Temple of Pluto, or Plutonian as it is known, was enclosed by a triangular retaining wall of coursed masonry built of limestone blocks, with a small portico at the southeast end. The enclosure separated the Temple of Pluto from the rest of the sanctuary. Inside the enclosure was a circular pit which was probably used for religious ceremonies. Two votive reliefs found here bear images associated with Pluto and Persephone, attesting that the temple was the Plutonian. Although we do not know precisely how the caves were used and what rites were associated with them, it seems that their presence was why this spot was chosen for the construction of the Temple of Pluto. The layout of the caves may have served for the reenactment of the sacred drama of Persephone's annual return from Hades. The next stop of our tour is the processional way, marked on the map with number 12. Continuing onwards, visitors follow the processional way, the continuation of the sacred way within the sanctuary, leading from the Lesser Propylaea to the Telesterion. In the Roman period, this road was paved with marble slabs, some of which survive in situ, especially in the southwest section. On either side of the processional way were pedestals for statues and other dedicatory structures, some of which can still be seen in the archaeological site today. Next to the processional way was a stepped platform cut into the east side of the rock, dated to the 4th century BC due to its elaborate construction. Perhaps from here the worshippers watched some of the performances that formed part of the sacred reenactment during the Eleusinian mysteries. On a rectangular terrace to the south of the platform are the remains of a building identified as the Temple of Hecate. Steps cut into the rock or built of limestone blocks lead up to the terrace. Further south, on the right side of the processional way, is a large boulder, which was probably used as a donation box for collecting worshippers' money to offerings. The next stop of our tour is the Telesterion, marked on the map with number 13. The south end of the processional way ends at the northeast entrance to the Telesterion. This was the most important building of the sanctuary, the place where the rites of the Eleusinian Mysteries took place. The earliest remains excavated in the area are dated to the Mycenaean period and belong to a rectangular building named Megaron B, with two columns along the main axis and a stepped portico. On the same spot, in the early 6th century BC, was built the Salonian Telesterion, which had a rectangular cella, inner chamber, built of polygonal masonry. The spreading fame of the sanctuary and the increasing numbers of worshippers in the second half of the 6th century BC made it necessary to construct a new building. It had to be in the same place, since this was the site that, according to myth, the goddess Demeter herself had indicated. This building, known as the Peisistratian Telesterion, was large and richly ornamented, and remained so in the classical and Roman periods. It was a more or less square hall, with three entrances on the east side, fronted by a Doric portico with 10 columns along the front and 2 on the narrow sides. Along the north, south and west sides were step platforms of 7 steps each, from which the initiates watched the ceremonies. In the southwest corner of the hall was the Anactorion, a small rectangular shrine room in which the sacred cult objects were kept. Only the high priest, the Hierophant, was allowed to enter this room. On the night of the mysteries he brought out the sacred objects and revealed them to the initiates. The architectural remains visible today mostly belong to the Telesterion of classical times, the Philonian Stoa, 4th century BC, and the Roman reconstructions, 2nd century AD. The classical Telesterion was a roughly square hall, like the preceding Peisistratian Telesterion, but larger, with 3 entrances on the east, north and south sides. On the east side was a Doric portico with 12 columns on the front and 2 on the narrow sides. Tiers of 8 steps, cut into the rock where possible or brick built, ran the length of each side, providing room for around 5,000 standing spectators. The roof of the building was supported on 42 columns, on which stood a second row of columns reaching to the roof. In the center of the roof was the Opaion, a sort of skylight through which light entered the building. In the center of the hall was the Anactorion, with the Hierophant's throne outside its doorway. The Telesterion of classical times was designed by the famous Athenian architect Aiktinus, although his plan does not appear to have been implemented very far due to construction difficulties and the death of Pericles. The construction plan was then assigned to 3 successive architects, Corobus, Metagenes and Xenocles, up to the building's completion. At the end of the 4th century BC, the Philonian Stoa was added to the east facade of the Telesterion. This stoa was designed by the Eleusinian architect Philon. It was founded on a solid stereobate and its floor was paved with slabs of Eleusinian limestone. It was built in the Doric style, with 12 columns on the front and 2 on the narrow sides, of which only pieces of the lower drum survive. The columns and superstructure were built of Pentelic marble. In 170 AD, the Telesterion was burned down by the Costovox raiders from the north. When it was reconstructed in the reign of Marcus Aurelius, the classical plan was preserved and extended approximately 2 meters to the west. In the Roman period, 2 staircases were also cut into the rock, leading to a long court, 70 meters long and 11.45 meters wide, the upper court, which was formed by leveling the rock along the west side. Throughout the history of use of the Telesterion, worshippers congregated in the sacred court on its east, north and south sides. The court, which contained altars and a multitude of dedicatory structures, was where the sacred ceremonies were held. The next stop of our tour is the Temple of Faustina, marked on the map with number 14. At the north end of the upper court of the Telesterion are preserved, though they are not now visible, the foundations of a temple that was probably built in the time of Marcus Aurelius. It was dedicated to Faustina the Elder, wife of the Emperor Antoninus Pius, who was deified after her death in Rome in 141 AD and honored as the new Demeter. On his deathbed, Antoninus Pius had appointed Marcus Aurelius his successor to the imperial throne. As an expression of gratitude, Marcus Aurelius carried out works at the Sanctuary of Eleusis, restoring the Telesterion and building the Temple of Faustina. The temple had a portico with 6 columns between pilasters. The cella was small and had a domed roof 2.50 meters in diameter. The portico had a separate, flat roof lower than the main roof. The walls of the cella were clad in marble, while the floor was paved with large square slabs. The west wall of the temple abutted the Lycurgian wall, the northwest corner of which jutted into the west hillside. No evidence of a cult statue was found within the temple. The building, set 4.10 meters higher than the terrace, at the head of monumental staircase built to provide access, was a particularly impressive example of Imperial Roman architecture. The next stop of our tour is the Temple of Sabina, marked on the map with number 15. East of the Temple of Faustina preserved the remains of another temple, also of the Roman period. The most widely accepted view is that it was dedicated to Sabina, the wife of the Emperor Hadrian, as a mark of respect. The temple is set on an artificial terrace measuring 14.10 by 11.20 meters, roughly half of which was cut out of the rocky hillside. Due to the difference in height between this level and the processional way to the east, a flight of 10 steps was built, occupying the whole entrance. The temple is a tetrarch-style templum in antis, with the side walls extending to form a porch, with a shallow portico and a roughly square cella. The east pediment was decorated with a carved scene of the abduction of Persephone by Pluto, a smaller-scale copy of some of the figures on the west pediment of the Parthenon. Unfortunately, the two main figures, Persephone and Pluto, are lost. However, fragments of sculptures survive, depicting the goddesses Athena and Artemis, who accompanied the young daughter of Demeter. Athena is identified by her helm and aegis, while Artemis is her quiver. The abduction scene is also observed by other heroes and heroines of Eleusis and Athens. They include Cecrops and his daughter Herse, who are easily identified because they are depicted in exactly the same way in the corresponding group on the west pediment of the Acropolis. Plaster copies of these Parthenonian sculptures are displayed in the permanent exhibition of the Archaeological Museum of Eleusis. The request by the Ephorate of Antiquities of West Attica to the National Archaeological Museum for the long-term loan of the surviving original sculptures in its permanent exhibition has been approved, and they were recently moved to the Museum of Eleusis, to be displayed together in the forthcoming re-exhibition. The next stop of our tour is the Church of Virgin Mary, Panagium S. Sporitissa, marked on the map with number 16. On the hill of the sanctuary, where remains dating from prehistoric times to the Christian era coexist, and east of the Temple of Faustina, stands the post-Byzantine Church of the Panagia. It is built on the ruins of an earlier church, probably one of the three early Christian basilicas of Eleusis, of which only the architectural remains on the east side are visible today. The church is dedicated to the Presentation of the Virgin, whose feast day is celebrated on the 21st of November in the middle of the sowing period. That is why she is named the Panagium S. Sporitissa, the Virgin of the Mid-Sowing. On her festival, worshippers flock to the church with polysporia, a variety of boiled cereals and legumes, two of them blessed by the Virgin in order to ensure a good harvest. Thus the memory of the ancient goddess Demeter, protectress of agriculture and the ancient city of Eleusis, lingers on in the figure of the Mother of God. The post-Byzantine church is a single-nave, barrel-vaulted basilica with rough stone walls. The interior is decorated with 18th-century wall paintings. The built templon is adorned with later paintings and a wooden epistyle. West of the church stands a later bell tower, founded on a solid ancient base and rising in three levels. The two upper levels are dated to the first half of the 19th century, have cross-vaulted roofs and are built of reused blocks and marble elements from the earlier structures of the archaeological site. The roof is crowned with a marble cross of Byzantine type. The bell tower is not mentioned in early written sources, but it is depicted in engravings and photographs of the 1860s. The first known reference to the church is by the Sicilian traveller Xavier Scrofani in a letter dated 1794, while the bell tower first appears in photographs taken by Dimitris Constantine in the 1860s. On the hilltop stands a modern clock tower installed in May 1925. After a gap of several years due to technical problems, the clock was repaired and still tells the time today. The next stop of our tour is the Boulouterion, marked on the map with number 17. In the south court of the Telesterion, in the southeast corner of the Lycurgian enclosure, lie the foundations of a rectangular building of the 4th century BC which has been identified as the Boulouterion or Council House, where the Sacred Senate may have met. It consists of three rooms, of which the central one had a semicircular back wall. In front of the building were votive stelae in honor of people who had provided services to the sanctuary. In the Roman period, this building was replaced by a stoa. Only the stylobate of its columns is visible today. To a second building of the same period or later belong the remains of two concentric semicircles in the area of the central and west room of the 4th century Boulatruian. The inner semicircle was stepped, while the outer had a facade of five columns between two pilasters. This building, in the form of an Ogion, was probably used as a Boulatruian in Roman times. Two statue pedestals at the ends of the inner semicircle are obviously later additions to the facade. From here visitors can either head southwest towards the archaeological museum on the south slope of the hill of the ancient Acropolis, or pass through the gate in the Lycurgian wall, south gate, and head east outside the sanctuary enclosure. The next stop of our tour is the Roman house marked on the map with number 18. A few meters below the courtyard of the archaeological museum is a large rectangular building of the 2nd century AD, known as the Roman house. This was a sumptuous two-story house, one of the private residences of dignitaries built outside the fortified area of the sanctuary in Roman times. The peristratian wall and the underlying rock formed the north wall of the house. The house consisted of small rectangular rooms set around a square atrium with a mosaic floor and a small marble cistern in the center. The rooms on the north side are the best preserved, with frescoes and mosaic floors decorated with geometric motifs. These were probably the tablinum, dining and reception rooms for guests. On the east side of the atrium was a staircase leading to the upper floor. A second courtyard on the south side may have been used as a garden and a vantage point for viewing the games held in the nearby stadium. The privileged location of the house, and a roof tile bearing the inscription Era Lufsinos, Sanctuary of Eleusis, indicate that this was the residence of an eminent member of the Eleusinian priesthood. The next stop of our tour is the sacred house marked on the map with number 19. Outside the south gate and southeast of it, on a terrace running north to south, are the remains of a late geometric building. It is named the Sacred House because it is thought to have been dedicated to the cult of an ancestral hero. The tomb found east of the house may have belonged to him. The house consists of a row of rooms opening off a long corridor, with a paved courtyard in front. The remains of a built bench are preserved in the northernmost room, and those of a built pit in the central room. The large urns, typical sacrificial vessels, found in the two smaller rooms show that the building served a cult function. In the early 6th century BC, the sacred house was replaced by a small square room with an altar, which was built in front of the wall of the court and had an ash-covered floor. A later altar in front of the room contained sherds of black figure vases and clay figurines in an extensive ash layer, attesting to the continuation of worship. In Peisistratus' time, the room was destroyed and an enclosure wall of impressive polygonal masonry was built around the ruins of the older buildings. During the same period, a small limestone temple was constructed on the ruins of the sacred house. The small marble statue of the fleeing core displayed in the Archaeological Museum of Eleusis may come from this temple. The next stop of our tour is the Mithraeum marked on the map with number 20. At the south end of the polygonal enclosure around the sacred house, against the east side of the enclosure wall, is a building of the Roman period. The excavators interpreted it as a Mithraeum due to its peculiar interior layout, which is reminiscent of spaces used in the cult of Mithras. Mithras was a god of Indo-Iranian origin, the chief deity of a mystic cult that flourished in the Roman Empire in the 2nd and 3rd centuries AD. The worship of Mithras was very popular among the soldiers of the Roman legions, who spread throughout Europe as they moved around on military expeditions. The building consists of a rectangular room with two large built podiums on the long sides, accessed by small flights of stairs. The statue of the god probably stood on another built podium at the back of the room. At the entrance of the Mithraeum, on the east side, was a reused marble propylon of the classical period. This Doric propylon with two columns on the front is the monumental propylon that adorned the Peisistratian north gate from the 5th century BC. After the destruction of the north gate in the mid-1st century BC, the portico was safely set aside before being reused for the Mithraeum, probably in the reign of Augustus. In the Roman era, official religion gradually evolved due to the influence of foreign cults and cultures, which spread easily after the Romans conquered other peoples. Ateleusis, the last Hierophant, from Thespiae, even held the rank of Pater in the Mithraic Mysteries. The next stop of our tour is the gymnasium marked on the map with number 21. Just to the east are visible the foundations of a large rectangular building with a peristyle central court, side rooms and a small propylaeon at the front, dated to the Roman period. The ground plan of the building shows that it was a gymnasium where youths exercised, an indispensable feature of all ancient cities and sanctuaries. The court was the exercise yard while the side rooms were used as teaching and preparation areas for the athletes. The next stop of our tour are the public buildings marked on the map with number 22. Continuing northwards, we see several public buildings of the Roman period. Against the outer side of the Lycurgian and Periclean wall were cisterns and fountains for the throngs of worshippers. The cistern complex consists of four rectangular spaces built of rough stones reinforced with bricks, with the retaining walls on the east side. Next to the cisterns is a group of six fountains of similar construction which are fed by the cisterns. On the east side are the stumps of buttresses. These structures were probably built during the reign of the Emperor Hadrian, as was the large underground cistern on the east side of the Greater Propylaea. They form part of the major water supply project, including works large and small, in the sanctuary and city of Eleusis. To the north, in the area outside the eastern extension of the wall, which was significantly reinforced in Roman times, are the remains of buildings of the same period. They, too, served the needs of the large numbers of pilgrims who visited the sanctuary. The remains of a bathhouse complex heated by a hypercore system of suspensory are visible southeast of the fountain house. This is a low, underground space with rows of brick pilasters supporting a paved slab floor. This space was supplied with hot air from an oven, prefernium, heating the floors of the rooms above. The thermi yet cold, tepid and hot baths, the frigidarium, tepidarium and caldarium, allowing the body to adapt from the cold pool to the hot and vice versa. The thermi also included areas for entertainment, massage and socializing. The buildings in the area south of the thermi have been interpreted, from their layout and finds, as hostels for worshippers during their brief stay during the Eleusinian Mysteries. Leaving the hostels and thermi behind, visitors now head northwest, pass through the east triumphal arch and return to the Roman court where the tour of the archaeological site began.